Hello, Mr. Guy Métan. I'm very happy to have you on board for this interview for the Solari Report. I'd like to introduce you briefly to our viewers. First off, you're a journalist. I think you've started your career at La Tribune de Genève, and you co-founded the Geneva Press Club. You also were or still is president of the Swiss-Russian Chamber of Commerce that was created in 2005. You're also a former member of the Christian Democratic Party, and you are now a member of the Swiss People's Party, so you have an active career in politics. You also were former president of the Swiss Red Cross, and also you wrote several books, one of which is Creating Russophobia, from the Great Religious Schism to Anti-Putin Hysteria, that was published in 2017. And that's how I came to know you through different interviews you gave in French and in English. And I found that your discourse, your knowledge were very, very interesting and very different from what we're used to hearing. And that's why I wanted to invite you to speak to our viewers. And really, it was passionate to understand, thanks to you, the different relationship we had through a thousand years of history, basically. Where do you start?
So thank you for inviting me to this talk. It's a pleasure to be here with you. For me, I just visited the United States 10 days ago. I was in Detroit and after in Boston for visiting some friends. So I'm very happy to have these exchanges with you today and with our American friends. Yes, as you told, I am interested by the history in general, but by the history of Russia and history of Russophobia especially. In 2015, after the Crimea, the first Maidan events in Ukraine in February 2014, and the annexion of Crimea to Russia, I was surprised by the density or the depth of Russophobic stances of Russophobia in the Western countries, as in Europe, as well in United States. It was a surprise to observe that. And I asked the question, why? Why such Russophobia? Because there are many wars. USA has decided to also create wars, like in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in other countries, but there was no such Russophobic reaction or no such anti-American reaction. So why this Russophobia was so high? And I tried to understand. And when I started my research, I noticed that this Russophobic vision, let's say like that, was very deeply anchored, very deeply rooted inside the Western, let's say the Western mind. Especially, that's why I called my book, not in English, but Creating Russophobia from a Religious Schism. So it's 1,000 years old, this religious schism, until now. Why? Because as maybe some of our listeners do know, at that time in the 11th century, there was a big religious gap, a big religious divide between the Roman Catholic based in Rome with the Pope and the Eastern Orthodox Church based in Constantinopolis, in Byzantium. And this religious schism has founded as, represented the basement, the ground of this Russophobic. I will try to explain why. I will not come in details about the religious, you know, it was a conception of the Trinity of God, you know, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. It was a case about that. But why it occurred? It occurred because the West, the Western Empire, was has disappeared after the Roman Empire, 6 centuries before. And there were tentatives in the West, in the Western Europe, to recreate an empire, a new Roman Empire. But at that time, the empire, the existing Roman Empire, was based in Constantinopolis and not in Rome, not more in Rome. So it was a first geopolitical competition between Western Europe and Eastern Europe, the Rome and Constantinople, already existing in the 11th century. And the religion was used as an ideological case in order to justify this geopolitical competition, a little bit like as we can observe now in Ukraine. It was a kind of civilizational war at that time. So that's the beginning of the story.
Can we make a summary? We'll say that we had a Roman Empire. It got split in two, and yeah, the two parts wanted to be the top power over a reunited Roman Empire. And so we had the East. To my viewers, East means present Turkey, Constantinople, Istanbul right now.
Yes, exactly.
The West with Rome, Ravenna, Rome, and the West of
the
Europe.
German, the French, and the English. They were not existing at that time. People were living there, but the main state in the West was the German, based in the south of actual Germany. But exactly, you explained quite well the thing. So based on this divide, two competition between these two states, it started an ideological and civilizational war between the two capitals, Rome and Constantinople, Istanbul, let's say, until the collapse of Constantinopolis with the Ottoman conquest in the 15th century, so 4 centuries later. And since then, since the 15th centuries, the legacy of the Orthodox Church, of the Orthodox Christianity, was interrupted in Turkey, but it was the legacy was taken by the Russian. The Russian were emerging, the Russian state was emerging at the time, and the legacy of the Orthodox Church migrated from Constantinople to Istanbul to Moscow. And since this 15th century, we can observe that the narrative of hate against the Orthodox migrating from Turkey to Russia since this century.
Okay,
to summarize,
when the Eastern Empire was taken over by the Muslim, the Orthodox went north into Moscow.
Yeah.
And they think they are the legacy of the Orthodox Church of
exactly.
The Eastern Empire. And now you see the rivalry from the West and the East, but from the West to Moscow instead of
exactly.
Okay.
Thank you for your summary. No, that was exactly the case, because we could see the theologian, the Catholic theologian in Rome, struggling very harshly against not more the Greeks who were in Istanbul, but against the Russian Orthodox who were in Moscow. And it was the ground. And at the end of the 18th century, in the modern times, this old ideological, religiously based competition became political. Because at that time, the main power in Europe was not yet Great Britain, but France. France was the main state in the European state in the 18th century. And the King of France, Louis the 15th, married a Polish princess. And so he made an alliance with the Polish, and the Polish people were Catholic, and so they were very opposed to the Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox at the time, and also Orthodox Ukrainian, let's say. And so the King of France became very anti-Russian because of her spouse, of her the queen, because of his queen, who was very anti-Russian, anti-Orthodox at the 18th century. And this king forged a fake testament of the Tsar Peter the Great. The Tsar Peter the Great was the founder of the modern Russia in the beginning of the 18th century, in the years 1701 to 1715, more or less. And this forged document, this fake testament, was supposed to tell to the heirs of the Tsar that the mission, the holy mission of the Russian Tsar, was to conquer the Western Europe, to conquer Germany, France, Great Britain, Italy. So that was the supposed holy mission of the Tsarist Empire. It was completely fake, but it was used by this king and after by Napoleon. Napoleon was aware, he was informed about this fake testament, and he used it. He published, it was secret at the time, but he published it in 1812. Why? Because Napoleon was friend with Alexander I, the Tsar of Russia. But in 1807, they separated. They became enemies. And so Napoleon tried to weaken Russia, exactly what we can observe now with the NATO in Ukraine against Russia. It was the same vision by Napoleon, and he used the fake testament he published in a book by his propaganda minister, Mr. Charles Ferdinand Lesueur, his name. It was the propaganda, let's say, the information minister of Napoleon at the time, using this fake testament to justify its invasion, military invasion of Russia, which took place 1 year later in 1813. But as you know, the invasion, Napoleon's invasion of Russia, completely failed because Russia was the victor, got the victory against Napoleon. But that's the beginning of the modern Russophobic, let's say, ideological struggle from the West, Western countries, against Russia, because this fake testament was used after the Napoleonic Wars by the Great Britain. It was translated into English, published in London in the years 1818, 1819, and used by the British propaganda to justify their opposition against Russia. As you know, Great Britain and Russia were together. They were allied against Napoleon. But after the victory, the Great Britain became very anti-Russia. It's funny to observe. And they use the fake testament to justify this opposition, saying, oh, but you know, the Tsar of Russia is too strong, is too powerful, and we need to check him, to control him, to because he could put in danger our empire in India, in Egypt, in Mediterranean Sea, and so on. So he's our main competitor. We have to, control it. And that's why the Great Britain, France, and Italy, they declared the war against Russia, the first Crimean War in 1853. They used this fake testament to just exactly like Napoleon 40 years earlier. They used the same fake ideological, you know, lie as a pretext to invade Crimea at the time.
So we can say that for a fake will, a fake testament, it has a long life.
Very long life, because as you know, it's not finished, the story, because even in 1945, after the Second World War, it was used, this fake testament, as a base to justify the Cold War by the United States. If you look at the text, I mentioned that in my book, but if we can see the long history of this fake testament to justify the fight against Russia during more than one century. So it's very funny. The fake testament was destroyed by French historians at the end of 19th century. Because as you probably remember, in 1870, France was beaten by Bismarck, by the German Kaiser, the German Reich, Second Reich with Bismarck. And so France was looking new allies against their main enemy, which was not more Russia, but Germany, Germany Empire, was looking for new allies. And there were not so many, but Russia was a good candidate for that. And so France started to approach Russia. So it could not consider Russia as an enemy. So that's why, by magical spirit, at the time, the French historian, suddenly discovered that this fake testament was a fake, and they published it. They said it was fabricated by the king, former king Louis the 15th. So we can forget it. But despite this, it was still used by the ideologues of the Cold War after the Second World War. It's funny to observe that.
Yeah. So we left off at the Crimean War in 1857, that's it?
53. It started to 53 and finished in 56. And 1856, yes. 3 years. And finally, Russia was, the allies were the winners of this war. And after there was an agreement and so on. But it was after that, after 20 years, Russia came again on the surface and was still a great power. But it's interesting to observe that how this Russophobia migrated from France to Great Britain, to British Empire, and still was used, the Russophobic, just to mention it, everybody knows about Dracula. Dracula is this supposed Romanian Carpathian count who was installed, yes, in the north of actual Romania. And the story of Dracula was created by a British imperialist author called Bram Stoker. And Bram Stoker took his inspiration to make the portrait of Dracula. He used the Russian archetype of duke, you know, of nobility, to paint Dracula. Because at the time, in the 19th century, this part of Carpathia belonged to Russia, not to actual Romania. So in his view, Bram Stoker used the story of Dracula to attack the Russian. And the readers of the 19th century, they knew about it, because Dracula was the cartoon of the typical Russian bad guy, you know.
Right, it was a stereotype Russian, and we say was character assassination.
Exactly, and it's interesting if you look at the cartoons published by the British press in the years 1850s, 60s and 70s and so on, you can see cartoons showing a vampire, let's say Dracula as a, you know, vampire. It's okay in English?
Yes, it's vampire. Yes,
vampire. You can see the face of the Tsar, Nicholas I, with big teeth, try to suck the blood of the poor British people. You know, you have the Tsar vampire on London, flying on London in order to suck the blood of the innocent poor British people, you know. At the time, the bad Russian was depicted as a vampire. Now it's more the bad beer, or the bad Putin, but you know, the beer of the, yeah. It's interesting to notice how Dracula was used as an information war of the time, information war, object of the 19th century. So, and after that, the Russophobia migrated from Great Britain to Germany, because as you know, Great Britain accepted also at the beginning of 20th century to become friend ally with Russia, because you, as you remember probably, during the First World War, Great Britain, France, and Russia fought against Germany and Austria. So that's why Great Britain at the beginning of the 20th century forgot its Russophobic ideology like France in order to make an alliance with Russia against the new main enemy, which was German Empire and Austrian Empire.
So I will sum up by saying the UK, Great Britain, is happy to have the Russian has friends or allies when they're against one of the other European countries.
Exactly. And when it was the same case in the Second World War, UK, Great Britain didn't hesitate to make an alliance with Stalinist Stalin, Bolshevik, because the main enemy of Great Britain was Hitler and Nazism. And as soon as the war finished in 1945, they forgot their ally and changed and started the Cold War, exactly as it was the case in 1815 after the Napoleonic War. It's very interesting to notice how Russophobia and Russophilia, let's say, could change depending of the state of geopolitics and the the main enemy to be fought. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so, what can we say right now that this Russophobia, or more specifically, what's going on in Ukraine? We don't have a war in Europe. I mean, we don't have the same landscape that we had on the Second and the First World War, as I understand. So how do you explain what's going on in Ukraine?
Yes, for me, but the war in Ukraine, in my view, was mainly connected to the progress of NATO, because the NATO new members who were admitted as new members of the alliance after the collapse of the Soviet Union, Eastern European countries such as Baltic country, Poland, Romania, has been considered by the Russian as a threat for them. Exactly the same case as, which occurred in 1962 when the Soviet tried to put some nuclear missiles in Cuba. It was considered as an existential threat by the United States. So in that case, considering that some US military bases with potential nuclear missiles could be put in Romania, Poland, or Baltic countries, it was so very close to the Russian border. So logically, the Russian considered that as an existential threat. That's one explanation. It's a long explanation. And there was also the bombing of the Donbas population of between 2014 until 2022, which caused the death of 14,000 people, which is not few, which is not small. So it was a case. So let's say the Russian decided this military intervention, which I don't support because I am not a supporter of war, but that was the explanation, the based explanation explaining the Russian decision. Now, what we can say for me in Europe as well as in the United States, it's a very unbalanced view of this conflict. I don't try to justify the Russian or Putin or anybody. Everybody has to take his responsibility about that. But what is interesting for me is try to explain the roots of this war and also to criticize, that's my point of view, the unilateral vision of this conflict. Because I think it's wrong to consider that we have a fight against the good, let's say, Zelensky Ukrainian side against the total evil Russian Putin side. It's not so simple in my view. And if we wish to recreate the basis of a peace, we have to consider that, and we have to know that in order to find some solution. That's why I try to have a check and balance, or a balanced, more balanced view of mm-hmm. this conflict. And as far as I can say, there is also an information war led by the Western countries and NATO against the Russian. And for me, that's a pity. I can understand the reasons. I know the narrative of the good democracy against the bad autocratic countries. For me, it's not exactly the case, because in this case, how can you explain the bombing of Serbia by NATO in 1999, or the invasion of Iraq or Afghanistan with false pretexts, or even lies, like it was the case in Iraq in 2003. So I think the West has no lesson of morale to give to the world. That's why I am defending a more balanced vision, and maybe to cool down the information war and ideological war, but it's a personal opinion.
Well, if I step in the foot of a regular, really random French person that has no high knowledge of history and geography, or even myself, I mean, a couple of years ago, I probably knew where Ukraine was, but maybe with some confusion. Mm-hmm. And my feeling was nobody knew about Ukraine till recently, until the media, the propaganda, everybody was saying we have to support Ukraine. But the strange thing is that Europe was rather peaceful, no war at sight, like the wars we've already experienced. Mm-hmm. And basically, I have the feeling that somebody, some group is trying to form a new empire. On the basis of the old Roman Empire, mm-hmm. plus the remnants of the East Roman Empire, and the U.S. included.
Yeah.
Of course, U.S. being an extension of the U.K., Great Britain,
exactly.
and a couple of leftovers of the French tradition, I said, because there is no French power anymore mm-hmm. on that side of the Atlantic. So somebody's trying to create a new empire that probably will include a part of the Eastern countries, like around Turkey or
Romania, Georgia,
And they're like, my feeling was they want to have it very isolated to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And the limit will be Russia, the core of Russia, or they try to extend as much as they can eastward. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Russia is a resistance, and they try to push it as east as possible.
Yeah, that's exactly the case for me. I shared this view. It's an open view, because if you read the Rand Corporation report in 2019 called Overextending and Unbalancing Russia, it was clearly written in that report, all the schedule, all the agenda, which is taking place actually presently in Ukraine. And if you read also the book of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was advisor to Reagan, to former US presidents, in his book, The Great Chessboard, it's also clearly explained why the Western Empire, let's say, US and Europe, European country, should recreate, this new Roman Empire against the Russians. That's the story we have spoken about in the beginning of our talk. That's exactly the case. One of the non-written, non-open, or not secret, it's not secret, but non-said cause is also from certain circles in Washington trying to separate Germany from Russia. Because if you have the industrial power of Germany with the natural resources, oil, gas, and so energy resources of Russia, you can recreate a European economic power, more powerful than United States or China. You understand? So in the view, in the heads, in the heads of some people in Washington, it was also important not only to weaken Russia, but to weaken Germany in order to break the links between the both countries, in order to keep the power, the grip on Europe, and to make the grip of United States and NATO stronger. That's probably the main causes of this war in Ukraine, but it's not officially said for sure.
No, but we have the Nord Stream case. that exactly. helps you understand what's going on.
That's the exact illustration of what I have said. Yeah, exactly.
And so maybe we can say that, because if you're trying to have this kind of new empire, you need a new religion. If it's not a religion per se, like you're thinking about, you need a new culture, a common culture, something that binds everybody together.
Exactly.
What will be this culture like?
Yes, but now it's no more the religion. It's no more the Catholic against the Orthodox, because it's the past. But it's still living. It's still also living this religious ground, because you can see this divide is also dividing Ukraine into parts. The east of Ukraine is Catholic, is connected with Vatican and the Pope, and the east, the west, is Catholic more or less, and the east is Orthodox, connected with the Moscow Patriarchate. But it's not the most important. The new religion, in my view, that's the new, let's say, democratic religion. It's all the narrative we have, the ideological divide, democracy against authoritarian states, the human rights against the non-human rights, or the human rights supposed violations, such as Putin, Xi Jinping, and so on. So we have the religion of human rights, of democracy, of also wokeism, LGBT, gender case, all this kind, which is not shared by the Russian, the Chinese, and the rest of the world, but which is empowered, which is very put on the top by the West. So that's, we can say, we can summarize the new religion with these concepts of democracy, yes, human rights, gender case, and sexual identities, and so on. Yeah.
Well, actually, I think it's also very useful to distract people away from the main topics. Like if you talk about LGBT, human rights, yes, etc., you don't talk about energy price.
Exactly. Yeah.
Consumer price. Standard of living and
inflation, and so on. Yeah.
And it's exactly what is going now in France. I mean, we are living very, very many demonstrations and riots, as you may know.
Exactly.
It's a different topic, but it's in the air, as we say. I would like to ask you, what is the stance in Switzerland? Because Switzerland is a very interesting country. As one of my teachers, and a really good math teacher of mine, who was really also an historian, he said, you know, you look at Switzerland, it's the heart of Europe, physically, geographically, because it's the most independent one. And then he went on to discussing the history of Switzerland, the Helvetes, and I mean, your traditions, etc. And I think it's very rare to find groups or country that can find kind of a balance between the what's going on inside and outside. But I think Switzerland have been under a lot of pressure financially from the US for the bank system, and it's been very difficult for Switzerland to keep their balance in that sense. Yeah. And I'd like you to give us a bit of update information about what's going on in Switzerland relative to Ukraine, but maybe also more generally about what's going on and what you think it's going, which direction it's going on.
Yeah, no, you are right. Until now, Switzerland has almost respected the neutrality, because this neutrality started, the modern neutrality started with the Congress of Vienna, as we have seen after the Napoleonic War. So it was guaranteed by all the nations, the political powers in Europe since two centuries. And more or less, there were some cases during the World Wars, okay, but more or less we respected it and we applied this neutrality. But suddenly, last year, in February last year, with the Ukrainian war, suddenly in 48 hours, our Federal Council launched, has abandoned the neutrality, taking side with Ukraine against Russia, which was not at all in the tradition of Switzerland, because in all wars, in all conflicts, we tried to keep neutral, to keep balance. And it was a surprise. Obviously, the Federal Council, our government, didn't say, they say, oh, we respect the neutrality, but we will start a cooperative neutrality. It was the official name, cooperative neutrality or active neutrality. So it was just nonsense, but it was just to explain why they have sabotaged, you know, the neutrality and take side only for Ukraine and NATO against the Russian. And there is a debate now. There is also a popular initiative. The collect of signatures has started to claim for a strict neutrality, not this active or cooperative neutrality.
How do you say in French?
It's initiative populaire.
No, the active neutrality. It's a neutrality.
No, it's active. Neutrality active. Yes.
It's neutrality even ludicrous. Active. It's more ludicrous in French.
Voilà. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yes, in English maybe it's it sounds ridiculous. So it's a case. Now the Federal Council, our president last week made a statement saying we have to take care, we have to be cautious. I am very afraid of this frenzy, this war mongering hysteria. So they are trying to cool a little bit down because we have huge pressures by Baltic countries, European countries, asking us to deliver arms, to deliver weapons and munitions to Ukraine, which will be a formal breach of neutrality. Now, we didn't do it until now. It was more politically, it's not yet military speaking, this breach of neutrality. But yesterday, our Minister of Defense had, for the first time, an official meeting at NATO in Brussels with the Secretary General of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, just saying that Switzerland was very interested to develop closer ties with NATO, make some military exercise. So that's the beginning, the starting of a new, let's say, engrenage with NATO and a new breach in the neutrality. It's very preoccupying for me.
Well, I'll make a hypothesis. That's just one that from me. I mean, something that I assume could be the case that, you know, with this financial turmoil with peace.
Yeah, it's related.
Needs the US dollars to.
Exactly.
The Swiss bank, central bank cannot fix the problem by itself. And need the support of the US or the US British financial system. Yeah. And I think from what you just said, that it was very recently that the Switzerland will say, well, we'll help to cooperate in a military fashion. Like in my mind, it makes a click. I have no information or real confirmation, but it's just a presumption or hypothesis I'm making that the pressure is so high.
You are right. You are right, because we this pressure was already the case with the Jewish funds in the late 90s. It was already the case this pressure came from United States in the years 2000s. In 2009, we have to break with bank secrecy, Swiss bank secrecy. And now the new pressure came with the use of dollars, the dollar by our banks. And that's why the Federal Council has abandoned the neutrality. It was under the pressure of our banks because they could be under US sanctions, put under US sanctions, if they continue to use US dollars for their financial activities. And for the Swiss bank to be forbidden to use dollars, it's the end of our bank system. So that's why Federal Council was obliged to make this breach in neutrality to neutrality. And you are right, also the case of Credit Suisse, it was solved between phone calls between Washington, IMF, Mrs. Yellen, Janet Yellen, and our authorities in and also Swiss Central Bank and so on. It was, and probably maybe London too, London authorities too. So, they decided to ask or to force UBS to buy Credit Suisse. The use of the dollar threat was completely
understood.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'd like to finish up with if I recall well, you adopted a little girl, well, years ago in the 90s, a girl from Russia. And that's how you got interested in the Russian culture. And so I'd like you to tell us what you like most, like in terms of literature, music, or arts, what the main pieces you would like to share with our viewers, what we have to listen to watch or to hear from Russia.
Yes, no, I think we have a lot of things to hear from Russia, especially the music. As you mentioned, the classical music and so classical ballets, which are since centuries one of the biggest achievements of the Russian culture. But I would also mention some writers. I think to Dostoevsky, because I published last year a small book inspired by Dostoevsky, the brothers, Karamazov brothers. You have a passage, two chapters in that book mentioning the Great Inquisitor. That's a special story of the Karamazov brothers, saying it's the symbol, it's just a small story, tale, let's say, inspired by Jesus. It's the Jesus is coming back on the earth in the 15th century, and he's lots of people come to him because they have problems and they are attracted by his speeches and so on. And you have the great inquisitor who is very happy to have burnt dozens of heretics and so on. And he said, oh shit, Jesus is back. Because you know, his power is put in danger by the return of Jesus, because the great inquisitor used the Catholic narrative in order to have more power on the people. And so if Jesus is there, he has just to leave the scene, you understand? So that's the story. And I made a book inspired by Dostoevsky, saying the new inquisitor is the GAFAM, you know, let's say Facebook, Google, with all their stuff, trying to convince us that's the force of the good. And the new Jesus is inspired by Julian Assange, Mm-hmm. You don't know, because he's in, put in jail, he cannot speak, and he's the real wise guy, you know, in our world. But that's just some inspiration. So well, that's the force of the Russian literature to inspire people. Yeah.
Well, it's always the figure of the evil and the good.
Exactly.
It's a returning process. You exactly. always have to fight the bad.
Yeah.
And Christ went through martyrdom because of, it's difficult to fight the evil. And you shouldn't be desperate about that. Dostoevsky, I mean, in French we'll say l'âme russe, the Russian soul. Something that's very difficult to understand. And I think I got a bit of it because my first ballet teacher, classic mm-hmm. ballet teacher, was Russian. So it was Mrs. Zoya. And she had a big, thick wooden stick. And she will use it to put my knees and my feet properly. But she was delicate. It was, it will scare the children away. And I think that was the main reason we behaved. But they have this extreme temper. They can be good, bad, and they have passion.
Yeah, exactly.
And in a way that it's very difficult for the Western temper to understand, because there's sometimes no limits.
Yeah.
And because nothing really matters, and they have they're very romantic in this way.
Exactly.
Romanticism is really embodied by the Russian. And I think if you don't have this thing in mind, it's very difficult to understand that there's no way to stop.
Exactly.
They're set to a road. Rationalization won't work.
Yeah, exactly. They can be mystical. They can be emotional, romantic, as well as completely not barbarian but rude. You know.
Archaic.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yes, yeah, so it's that's the soul of the Russian soul, if I can say. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So well, I think we've pretty much you summarized pretty much it all, and very very nicely, very very simply for a very long and complicated story. Mm-hmm. I discover a lot of things thanks to you or. Thanks to your knowledge. Now, actually, I'm turning into the story of the south of France that's very linked to the east and west Roman Empire, mm-hmm. where you find this religious split between the Cathar and the Catholics. And I think it rings a bell with what's going on with Russia.
Exactly.
And I hope we can invite you over again. Maybe
with
for
pleasure.
What's going on with the present times, and you are some lights from time to time. I will be very happy to share your information and your knowledge with our viewers. Thank
with
you.
With pleasure. Thank you very much.
Bye bye, Guy.
Bye bye.